Hansen, Adam Matthews, he might be in the clear. Is it going to be? Yes! Celtic on the score sheet, short on stone in his first game at Celtic Park. We're in the hoops.
The Celtic fans come.
Johansson this time.
Experienced players, I don't know if they can cope with the noise.
Brown's pass, we're getting more than 2 minutes into added time. Mackay Stephen, oh, and that's a much better ball. We're getting in added time at the end of the game. Celtic evoke the spirit of 67.
Hello, and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 237. Is over and it's now time to analyse, review and discuss the Inter Milan match. So I decided to pick someone from very, very, very far away who wasn't at the game but watched it on the television, Mr. Mark Cooper from the deepest, darkest parts of South America. We're going to discuss the match and we're also going to have a little chat about the recent under-20 championships that Mark was watching. So this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. Okay, so as you'll probably tell from my voice, I'm not long back from Celtic Park, and it's sometimes good to get a perspective on a game from two people, one who's been there and one who is watching on television. So I didn't ask this question before we came on the podcast, and bearing in mind that you are thousands of miles away from me right now, Mr. Mark Cooper, did you actually get to watch the game?
I ran down, I'm in Buenos Aires in Argentina, and I ran down to a bar in the centre of a city, 5 p.m. It was a bit of a kind of hipster rock bar, and so I never actually got to turn the volume on. I got all these kind of looks. I turned up and I insisted that they showed a Scottish football team, and they just kind of stared at me. Then I mentioned Celtic Inter Milan. They thought, there might be some Argentinians playing. We switched it on. 2-0 down after, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last time I've been in this bar watching Celtic was the 6-0 against Barcelona. And I just thought, no, not again, not again. Just getting patronising pats on the back from kind of businessmen coming in for a beer. But, but it didn't turn out like that. It was a pretty, it's a really, really enjoyable game, actually.
Yeah.
Really good.
I mean, you've been at games where you've really enjoyed what's happened at the game in terms of the result and some bits and pieces. I can't remember enjoying a game of football so much, apart from the first 15 minutes or so. I can't remember enjoying a game of football so much for a very long time, particularly a European game of football, in terms of enjoying the 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So
it's so much to it. It was just going back and forth and back and forth. And especially there's something about seeing the young boys like Mackay Stephen and Armstrong have just arrived in and they're playing against, you know, international stars, world-class players, and they're getting the ball and they're going at them. There's something really kind of so enjoyable, so satisfying watching that.
So, the first 15 minutes, the first goal was one of those goals that when you're at the game, the ball's in the back of the net, your first reaction was that guy was standing in his own so much, surely he was offside. I've texted people who are watching it, he wasn't offside. So the first goal's a bit of a blur to me. And the second goal, my recollection is a bit of a weak, weird moving out of the box, a weak clearance by Izaguirre. He hits it against Van Dijk, it bounced back in, they've got two guys clear. So talk us through the first two goals as you saw them.
The first goal, it's one of these diagonal runs that happen in European football that we're not accustomed to in Scottish football, that the striker, or in the case of the Inter Milan player, the kind of number 10, makes this diagonal run across the defence. And we've seen it with the boy, remember when we played Basel and Hakan Yakin was threading through these balls and the Argentinian striker Jimenez is just running on to the ball that Yakin was playing. And then we took, like, it happens so frequently against European teams. And Van Dijk, to be honest, he was a yard or two off him. He should have been tighter to him. And so Shaqiri hits the ball, it's probably going about a yard or so wide of a post. Kind of, Gordon's not going to leave that ball because, you know, Shaqiri's striking it from 10, 12 yards or something. So he's not, it'd probably be a bit much to expect him to let the ball go past the post. But at the same time, he bats it straight back to him. And then still Van Dijk isn't on Shaqiri, and Shaqiri just kind of knocks it into net.
Yeah, I mean,
the second goal, oh, go on.
I was just going to say, the part of the reason why my initial reaction was the guy was onside was for him to have the time to steady himself, take a shot, have the shot parried back to him, and still be in yards of space.
I think if you watch a replay, I think you'll come to a conclusion that Van Dijk was sweeping for half a second as the ball is played, as Shaqiri makes a run going past him. He reacts to it, but even after he reacts to it, he doesn't get tight enough at all to get in front of that shot. The second goal, in some ways I feel a wee bit sorry for Izaguirre, in the fact that Palacios, he's kind of, as the ball's going into the box, he's behind Palacios. He kind of struggles and gets his shoulder in front of Palacios as the ball is just kind of dropping down. Mm-hmm. And he kind of sticks out his foot to clear it. And it's a terrible clearance. It's kind of like he kind of skates it, you know, at a right angle.
Yeah.
And it hits Van Dijk, rebounds back, goes into Palacios's, you know, into his path, who's free because he's the gear, has kind of got in front of him to clear it. So it was a poor clearance, but at the same time, Izaguirre did quite well in actually getting in front of him to clear it. But then, in retrospect, it would be better if he just stayed on goal side of Palacios and let Palacios kind of, you know, have the ball back to goal with Izzy behind him.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that dangerous. So he's probably to blame for that.
It's interesting you say about Van Dijk switching off for half a second, because one of the things that I've been saying this season is I've actually, you know how in the summer we were convinced that someone would come in for an £8 to £10 million bid for Van Dijk?
Yeah.
And we didn't get it. And the beginning of this season in particular, in the European games, I remember saying to people, I can see why. I've seen in a couple of games why people haven't come in, because a couple of goals that we've lost away from home in Europe, when you've watched the goal in real time, your initial reaction had been that somebody else had been at fault. I can't remember which goal it was. There was one in particular that I remember thinking Ambrose was at fault. And then at half time, when you saw the goal, you actually saw that it was because Van Dijk had switched off for half a second and played everybody on side. And that, for me, is actually probably the reason why Van Dijk hasn't had the massive bid come in for him, because in virtually every game in Europe this season we've conceded a goal, I felt Van Dijk has been at fault for switching off for that half second. And it's interesting that that's the very phrase you use. It's just that half second that gives the real top class players the ability to get in and get the goal.
Yeah. The kind of annoying thing for both ourselves and Van Dijk, if we assume that Van Dijk is definitely leaving this summer, is that these two games, every single team with a half-decent budget in Europe will be watching Van Dijk. And if Van Dijk had two exceptional games, as we know he can do, it would have just pushed his value up so much. Now if you're a major club in Europe and you're watching Van Dijk there and you've been unsure about him, you've got kind of various scouting reports about him, and you watch him on that evidence, you think, no, we were right to be cautious. He's at this stage, he's not at that level. And it's annoying because we can see that, like, when you watch, like, Man United players like Jones and Smalling, Van Dijk is a naturally better footballer than both of them.
Yep.
He can be at the level of one of the elite clubs in Europe.
Yep.
And, you know, in terms of, you know, money level. And he kind of had that possibility this summer, I think. But I'd be surprised. I could imagine maybe, I don't know, Southampton and Newcastle coming in, and then the price then depends on, you know, how much interest there really is, who's going to actually, how many clubs they're going to start putting in bids, blah blah blah. But I thought it was a pity. I thought two great games against Inter and we'll start getting a whole kind of, you know, a dozen clubs or so, and it'll just push the price up so much.
So those are some negatives, and at 16 minutes, uh-huh. I remember looking at the clock at 16 minutes and thinking, oh God, there's still only 16 minutes gone.
Yeah.
Then, I don't know whether it was Milan thinking the game was won, but Inter's thinking the game was won, but I don't actually think it was that. I think it was just us scoring the goal changed everything. It changed us.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed the game. I thought the first goal, Matthews did great. I thought Griffiths did great because he made a near post run, which took two or three of the Inter players with him, leaving Armstrong at the back post. And from that point on, for the next 20 minutes, was some of the most electrifying football I've seen, I've seen from a Celtic team in a European game in years.
Yeah. And the ball... So it goes into Johansson, and Johansson's ball into Matthews is really pretty good, actually. And Matthews takes it in his run as well, where it almost just like sticks to his foot. And then Matthews, as he's running with, there's an Italian defender maybe half a pace away from him. And he's now got into a box, and there's about, say 8 yards to the touchline. And I was kind of expecting, he's got half a yard on him, and I'm kind of expecting him to put in a kind of, maybe a hip-high cross or something, a head-high cross, to whip it in at that point. And the good thing is, he has the composure not to do that. He takes one more touch. The Italian, who's half a pace behind him, has to kind of relent a little bit, otherwise he gives away a penalty. And he's now almost on the 6 yard box, and he kind of drills that ball past Griffiths and into Armstrong. And it was nice, just that little moment of composure that you're hoping for, and it just works out, and you just see the ball, you see it go past the two Inter Milan defenders, and you're just waiting, hoping Armstrong's going to connect with the ball. And yeah, a lovely goal, lovely goal. And you're right, it then completely changes.
Because at that point, prior to that, you're actually just thinking, just give us a goal or something. Then from that point on, you actually start to believe, not only are we going to get back into this game, you actually start to believe that we can win this game. And the thing that got me, the guys next to me were talking after the second goal and saying, oh, you know, this isn't the SPL. We can't play like we do in Scottish football. And I said, no, We are evolving as a team with young players. That's exactly what we do. We have to play exactly the same football here tonight as we play in Scottish football every week, because that means being confident in the ball, confident in your position, having self-confidence. That's what we need to do. And the thing that got me that was so pleasing was we played like we do in Scottish football. The confidence of our players to play one-touch football. It was a joy to watch.
Yep.
And then the second goal is one of those ones where it's in the back of the net, and your first thought is, it's definitely in the back of the net, is it? It's not one of these ones that's gone round the side, hit the hoardings and come back in. and then you're thinking, no, it's in the back of the net. We're 2-2.
Yeah. It's that kind of about a triple take just to make sure, and you see him celebrating. But it's funny when you said, and you're thinking, just give us a goal. That was kind of what the equaliser was like. It was a kind of hook ball in by Johansson, kind of speculative over his shoulder and head.
Yeah.
And then Armstrong's just kind of running in I think it was Campagnaro, the Argentine defender, who kind of is a little bit perturbed by Armstrong running in, and it kind of hits off his knee or shin or something, and it's in the back of the net. It was such a kind of, it was a really cheap goal from their point of view. it was so enjoyable just to be within, 90 seconds?
Yeah.
2-0 to 2-2, and you're completely back in it.
And then, as I say, some of our football then, the speed with which we were playing, that was the thing, the speed with which we were playing, the confidence of people taking the ball when surrounded by Milan players. The nearest I can remember to it was when we lost 3-2 to Man United at Old Trafford under Strachan. And I remember at times, it was the first time I'd ever seen it, even in the great days under Martin O'Neill, it's the first time I'd seen Celtic playing in Europe. And when a player was under pressure, he played football to get out of it instead of just hoofing it somewhere down the park and hoping we could get something.
Yeah, that's true.
So, talk me through who are the players. I'm just about to get to the one mistake. Who are the players in the first half that you were pleased with, most pleased with, and what were the things that you thought that could be, we need to put work on that?
Matthews, everyone in the bar, and there's probably about a dozen people who are watching it properly, and just about everyone kept on asking me what nationality is Matthews, because I assume this is why they ask.
Yeah.
He was constantly going up that right side, but his touch when running at pace was like Matthews maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where you give him the ball, there's an Inter player comes within 5 metres of him, there's another Inter player kind of beyond him, and he still has the confidence not to just get it and turn back and, you know, pass it into centre-back, but he has the confidence to go forward, say, 10, 15 yards, and then, you know, maybe beat on a Browner inside him, and then he can pass it inside. But he was always confident to go 10, 15 yards, give it inside, and then be an option again. And it's like, I thought he was a standout player tonight. I haven't seen any reaction from TV or any Celtic fans' conversation, but for me, just watching it on the television, I thought he was exceptional tonight.
Who else, or what else were your thoughts?
Are we going to get on to Inter's third?
Well, I tell you, particularly in relation to Matthews, I thought part of the problem was Mackay Stevens can't defend.
Uh-huh.
Part of the challenge Matthews had when they had the ball was Mackay Stevens wasn't giving him any assistance. And in the second half, I was starting to be a bit concerned about Matthews. And then Brown ran over to the dugout, says something to Ronnie Dyla. He immediately tells Ambrose to strip, and Matthews goes off.
Uh-huh.
So patently, Matthews had a problem for 10 minutes before he went off. But I did think one of Matthews' challenges was the lack of cover he got from Mackay Stevens. Now, I get that. You know, Mackay Stevens is only young and he's still at Celtic, but that's an area I thought he had to work on. I thought Beaton was great tonight. I thought Brown was great. I thought Griffiths worked. I thought our front four did a great job.
I felt sorry for Griffiths because he had so many, there was so many balls that were only kind of, you know, 20, 80 balls or 30, 70 balls for him to win.
Yep.
And he ran and kind of hassled, and you knew he just wanted to kind of have a wee bit more possession. He wanted a few more balls in towards him. And he constantly, like, his pressing's obviously, you know, really impressive, and he's, you know, really lively, he's kind of perpetual motion.
Yeah.
I just felt sometimes that he must be at some point getting slightly frustrated because he's doing so much running and yet he wasn't getting the ball into his feet that often to kind of, you know, bring it forward himself.
But I wondered if he'd been told, a bit like I felt this in the Rangers game, if he'd been told, you'll play for 60, 70 minutes. Put everything you could put into 90 minutes into 70 minutes. That's what it looked like to me. So the third goal of Inter Milan. I have my own thoughts on what happened.
You're a goalkeeper, of course.
But there's two things. When the ball first came over the top, my initial reaction was, when I was young, I was told you never let the ball bounce. And the reason you never let the ball bounce is because of what happened when it did bounce. I felt the problem was the ball looked as though it was going to bounce towards Gordon and it sort of did a skid bounce off the ground. That's why you don't let the ball bounce. And he probably should have just run and hoofed it up the park. Not that I'm a fan of that, but he should have come out of his box and hoofed it because you don't let the ball bounce.
It was, but even when it did bounce, because it skidded and it almost seemed to, probably physically, not sure if it's possible, but it seemed to like speed up as well. And even when he dived to get it, I was kind of thinking, why are you diving? Palacios won't be able to get this anyway.
Uh-huh.
Like, if Palacios had got to that ball, he would have got to that ball right on a touchline by sprinting and then kind of, you know, back-heeling it onto a pitch or something.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't as dangerous as I think Gordon assumed the situation was. And it was such a cheap goal for them to get.
I mean, it's what you're saying there. I mean, my brother at half-time...
Completely out of nothing.
Yeah, my brother at half-time said he probably should have just let that go. Or... easy to say with hindsight, he should have just pushed it away and parried it instead of trying to hold it. And the worst thing about it was, it was only 30 seconds from half time.
Yeah.
So, did he manage, because obviously I'm in the North Stand, so it's anyway. Did he actually get hold of it?
He tried to get hold of it. I've only seen one replay of it, but he tries to kind of get hold of it, I think. But it kind of either slips off his gloves or he gets a terrible palm down to it. And weirdly, after it skidded and you kind of see his body moving in that kind of direction, I thought, you get that kind of panicky where you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? And you see Palacios almost thinking, like, Palacios carries on his run. Like, it isn't like the goalkeeper's coming out and the striker starts to kind of go from in a run to into a jog.
Yeah.
And he's kind of given up hope. I suspect Palacios kind of, in that kind of half second, also kind of thought, uh-oh, what's happening here? But it was a terrible. Like Gordon's had a great season, but that was terrible. That was really, really, yeah.
So,
anyway, sorry, I apologize. Everyone's
you're bringing
the game
it down.
Is on a high. I am bringing it.
Who do you think you are, Chris Sutton? Come on. So, to be fair, I mean, honestly, I cannot go on about how great the play was, the confidence. You know, one of the things that I found odd was going up to the game, listening to Radio Scotland, and they were talking about the fact that it was quite brave from Ronnie Dyle. He was playing the two Dundee United boys. I mean, we've only just signed him and he's played them. And I thought to myself, well, relative to the money we spend, we just spent a couple of million quid on these players. If their names were foreign, we wouldn't be questioning the fact that he was playing them after spending a couple of million quid on them. So, second half. What do you make of the second half?
Second half, I suspected around about a 57th minute. I remember looking up at the clock and it's about a 57th minute. And I thought our tempo was just about to drop. I was just getting a feeling that we put a lot into this game. Do we have that kind of third wind to kind of, you know, take us through, you know, for most of the second half? And it's impressive. What I was going to say, actually, not specifically about the second half, but the kind of lead up to the game and the expectations of the game, is that if this was Martin O'Neill's Sutton, Lambert, Lennon, Larson team, and they were playing against the Inter Milan, there wouldn't have been a kind of right for us to win that game at all.
No.
And that's the best team we've had in what, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
This is a team 8 months into a new manager's kind of regime. It's obviously not a finished article at all. It's a work in progress still. Okay, we've improved in the last, 4 or 5 weeks.
Yep.
There have been obvious improvements. There's a nice kind of rhythm the team's getting. The players look fitter. The passing's a little bit sharper. But, you know, it's a work in progress. We're like probably 2 years away from where we would like the Celtic team to be. And yet, if the Larson team had played that Inter team of, you know, two Argentinian international strikers up front, Icardi and Palacio, with Shaqiri, the Croatian boy who came on, Kovacic, Medelis, defensive midfielder, like, this is a genuinely good team. Like, this kind of squad, it wouldn't be unreasonable to see them in the quarterfinals of a Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're in a work in progress as well, but like, these are seriously good players. And our work in progress Celtic team have just drawn with them 3-3, with us making, you know, two pretty all three of their goals were pretty easy goals for us to give them.
And also, pretty easy goals for us to find a way to stop giving such goals away.
Exactly. I don't want to go on too far from, you know, the second half. In fact, I'll wait. We'll talk about the second half. I was about to talk about the second leg there,
First of all, second half. What were your overall thoughts in the second half and performance of the players and the substitutions that Ronnie Dyla made?
The substitutions were obviously impressive. With Henderson, the nicest pass of the game. Henderson's first time chipped pass over in towards either Griffiths or Gaudette. I don't know which one he's aiming for. Probably both of them. A lovely ball. I don't know if you've seen it, a replay of it yet.
I have seen on Twitter, yeah. Somebody posted a link to it.
Great. And, so Henderson comes on as a substitute. Little chip pass. Gaudette comes on as a substitute. Top-hand corner. pretty good. I think at that point, the whole bar in Buenos Aires jumped up and screamed. There was probably 12 of us who watched it continuously, and another 20 who would kind of glance up at a screen any time there's a kind of opportunity.
Yeah.
And there's like Argentinians hugging each other. It's a surreal moment where there's Argentinians hugging each other who I hadn't even spoken to. It was superb. And even the kind of the camera focuses on Gaudete after the game as he's kind of going over towards the Green Brigade, and the whole team is kind of out on the pitch. And that was kind of obviously going around across Latin America and across the world, these kind of pictures.
Yeah.
And it was such a much better, I don't want to say advert, because we're not really selling anything, but just a much better image to give of the club. That you have this kind of, in a Europa League, where like you're switching it through the channels and it's half-empty stadiums. It's fans that are barely celebrating when a team gets a goal. There's no singing. And it goes to Parkhead, and there's, you know, 5 minutes after full-time whistle, there's 60,000 people there still shouting and screaming. It's so enjoyable. It's just so enjoyable to see that from... Maybe it's because I'm so far away and you're watching, you know, I don't have that much contact with it. It's great. Absolutely fantastic.
Do you know the couple of points you touched on there? Your point about the guys hugging. There was two guys in front of me who were patently tourists, and apologies for not being able to pick up. They were obviously from Japan, China, or South Korea. You know, they were.
Yeah.
I don't think they were Korean. I think it was Japanese or Chinese. And when when each of the goals went in, they were getting their pictures taken galore all through the game. And when each of the goals went in that Celtic scored, they were just going mental. When the third goal went in, the equaliser, they were virtually in tears. Honestly. And then there in the row in front of me, the guy next to me picks one of them up and gives him a big kiss and a big hug, and his mates nearly wet himself laughing at it. And it was just fantastic. It was just everything about why it's great to be a football supporter in general when that type of thing happens. Again, the ball breaks through, and you're just, the first thing I did in that scenario was look across to the linesman to see, is he onside?
Yeah. Yeah,
and even in the position he's in, you're thinking just score, but actually the goal's a brilliant goal. It's a brilliant take. It's a brilliant goal, fantastic. And then your point about going out to the fans, apparently it's McManaman and Sutton on BT Sport were very critical of Celtic celebrating a draw. And do you know what? Those people should never ever get to go to a football game again, because they know hee-haw about what it is to be a football supporter, and they patently, what they're advertising is why wealthy football supporters like them gave up the game too early because they couldn't be arsed, because they'd lost the enjoyment of the moment. That's why Sutton and McManaman's career finished early, because they were too wealthy and the money in their pocket had made them forget why they started playing football in the first place. Because the reason the Celtic players went round the park, because they were happy and the supporters were happy, and it's all about creating the connection between the supporters and the players. And if McManaman and Sutton don't get that, well, that's their loss, not mine, because I was chuffed to bits that the Celtic players went round and celebrated with us a fantastic moment at Celtic Park. It was brilliant.
And also, like, I haven't heard those comments, obviously, but what do you want? do you want? After a six-goal thriller, you know, a goal in the 93rd, 94th minute,
The few people I've read on Twitter who have said things like, is it just me, or is Ronnie's roar a bit embarrassing when he celebrates a victory away at Hamilton? No, it is just you, pal, because do you know what? I don't want a Celtic manager who's so aloof from the supporters that when we are celebrating a victory, he's above that type of thing. Getty. I mean, honestly, Getty. It's people like that is the reason why, honestly, people like, go and watch something else. Go and watch, I don't know, go and watch chess or something. You know, if you cannot enjoy the moment of that, you're not a football fan. Mate, see if you're listening to this podcast and you're embarrassed by Ronnie Dyler's roar and you're embarrassed by the Celtic supporters, Celtic players going around celebrating and thanking the fans for the way we supported the team tonight. You're not a football fan. You don't get it. Go and pick an American football or some other sport. You patently didn't like it when you were a kid and you only got into it because everybody else did. Go and watch something else. That's my attitude. Enough of my rant on that.
I think you should maybe just capture that 80 seconds and put it as an advert for the podcast.
But come on, if you can't celebrate and enjoy that moment, get a grip, man.
I tell you what, you're talking about Guidetti's finish, it's taken his finish. About, say, 20 seconds before it comes to Henderson, the way he takes the ball and he's under pressure, say it's about the 93rd minute, he's under pressure, his footwork with the ball is really good, actually. If you see a replay of it or highlights of the game, really kind of pretty composed, especially with maybe 60 seconds, 90 seconds of the game to go. Pretty composed play. He gets it, receives it, holds off the Italian defender, nice footwork, gives it, and then moves into position. It's pretty good. Also, another little thing about a goal is the linesman does very well because maybe Griffiths is about, say, 2 metres away from Guidetti, and Griffiths, I think from the replay I saw...
Is it not Johansson?
Ah, you're right. It was Johansson.
Yeah.
And Johansson is half a metre offside, I think. But it doesn't go to Johansson. Guidetti was onside.
Yeah.
But I think Johansson was just slightly offside. And it doesn't go to Johansson and play on.
And it's a goal. Now, it's not quite a Louis Saha penalty moment straight after we've scored against Man United. But... you know, my brother looks at his watch and says, when they're kicking off after the goal, there's 10 seconds to go.
Yeah.
The ref's going to add on a bit of time. And the ball breaks through to them and Denier goes in for the challenge. And you're thinking, if you can just hoof this up the park, he'll blow when the ball's in mid-air, but we give away the free kick.
Yeah.
And then Gordon pulls off the save.
Yeah. Did you think that was going to be a goal? I'll admit I did.
But I actually thought...
It's so central. It's like the ideal position.
See, if this is us, we'd hit the wall with this free kick. That's what I thought. And they won't.
Yeah. And then, I just saw, and Shaqiri is, holding a ball and is kind of spinning it in his hands, and I'm just thinking, no.
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 So...
It was such a good game. It's Eddie was tweeted about this as Partizan Belgrade all over again. I was thinking it was who is the Austrian team? Tyrol?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Tyrol or something with V-Corps scores and it's going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah,
it was
a
fantastic game. And that's what we want as Celtic fans is that when we play in these games, we compete. And you go at them and you don't play naively, but you go at them and you compete with the best teams. That's what we did.
There was one of the great things for me tonight was we started with 5 Scottish players. We had young talent on the pitch in Armstrong, Gary Mackay-Stephen. And the substitution that Ronnie Dyler made to bring Henderson on, to pick, when he had experienced players on the bench, to pick Henderson, I thought was a tremendous vote of confidence in Liam Henderson, in a player that's come through our system. But the other point you make there about this is what Celtic should do, coming away from listening to Radio Scotland, coming away from the game. And I thought to myself, I can pick the two Celtic fans listening to this, and I can pick the two non-Celtic fans listening to this. Because Willie Miller and Chick Young were saying, this is fantastic, but look at the goal Celtic let in, and blah, blah, blah. And Tom English and Pat Bonner were just saying, this is brilliant, this is football, this is entertainment. And I thought, do you know why? And I don't know for certain about Tom English, but I did think to myself, because a Celtic fan leaving that game thinks that's how you play football. Uh-huh. And the fan of a boring team thinks, Abby, you let in three silly goals. That, for me, was the difference. So, second leg, 2 or 3-0 to Celtic?
3-3. Izzy's drew a goal, so we've got Izzy down. Now, if I was... I know we lost 2-0 against AC Milan.
Yep.
But if I was involved in Celtic, I would be putting that video into Dela to show him how we played that game. We were superb in that game. But 18 minutes until they hit a speculative shot, kind of a ricochet off Izaguirre, and they get a goal with, say, 10 minutes to go, and then they get another goal in injury time. But for 75 minutes, we were excellent in that game. And we had, Mulgrew and Brown, basically pretty kind of steady, controlled the play. Izaguirre was superb on the left. Matthews going up and down the right. We just needed maybe a little bit more incision and kind of a little bit more clinical up front, because we had about 4 or 5 chances in that game. Like Stokes hit a bar with a free kick, but Matthews came through, Commons had a good chance. All we needed was a wee bit more luck, and I would love if we played a kind of more or less a replica of that kind of performance. I think if we had that level of performance with that kind of... it was a confidence, but it wasn't kind of... It wasn't like gung-ho. It was kind of... I wouldn't say cautious, but it was kind of an assured kind of a confidence when we had the ball that we weren't going to be rushed. And sometimes I think when I watch Celtic in Europe, when they have the ball and they're under a wee bit of pressure, sometimes I think they maybe rush a pass a wee bit. Even tonight at times, I thought, although we played really well, that we just needed a wee bit more kind of a little bit of a pause at times and a bit of composure. And just sometimes passes went on and we should be kind of confident enough to give it back into a fullback and recycle the ball again. And if the pass isn't on, just retain the ball. As you said, if we cut out these stupid chances or these stupid kind of opportunities that we gave them tonight, I'm fairly confident. Then again, Icardi might score after 5 minutes and, who knows, but I'm fairly confident about a return on.
I don't think it's impossible. I genuinely don't think it's impossible that we go through. We may, as you say, you may lose an early goal and you might, it's difficult to come back. But much as before the game, Tom English was commenting on Celtic losing games away from home, for me, equally as important is Celtic are scoring goals away from home in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're scoring a lot of goals away from home in Europe. I mean,
yeah.
Do you remember those silly people online who don't understand that playing two up front doesn't necessarily mean you've got a more attacking formation?
I'm saying nothing.
And I tell you one other thing that I want to say. On Thursday, I was down with the Celtic FC Foundation at something, and it flew back to Glasgow, get a taxi home. Taxi driver was a Celtic fan who was telling me he doesn't go to games at Celtic Park because he doesn't want to give money to the Celtic board until they invest properly in the team, which obviously immediately flagged up. He was a financial genius to me. And then told me that he goes to all the away games. So I asked him why he pays for every other team in Scotland to have a better team but won't pay for us. So he then changed the subject and told me that he doesn't want to go because Ronnie Dyle is a dud. And he would be proved correct because we would be beaten by 4 or 5 goals by Inter Milan, who are an average team. So if he's listening to that taxi driver, get it right up you. That's all I want to say to him. Because I've been looking online at the people who think you can bring in a new manager who's playing a completely different system, wants the players to completely change, and apparently human beings, they defy what they know in their own life, because apparently these people think human beings can change from doing their job one way to a completely different way, and they can do that in the space of about a week. And okay, I'm going to give the guy time. I'll give him a week and 2 days. And if it's not changed in a week and 2 days, we revert back to what we are, because I don't like change. I like things to stay as they are so that I can whinge about that. Those people weren't on Twitter tonight, I noticed.
Because I was at a bar high.
So, one other thing I wanted to speak to you about, because I'm conscious of the fact that it's 12:30 for me. One other thing I wanted to speak to you about was the you're a man spotting all the talent coming out of South America that Celtic completely ignore because it doesn't go through Israel with Duran Duran as the agent. So what have you been spotting in South America's hotbed of talent that we ignore?
Well, quite often I'll be going to numerous games every week. And youth games, reserve games, professional games, but also I'll go up to Paraguay and Uruguay. And last October I went over to watch, there was Peñarol were playing on Friday night, and then on a Saturday, Nacional, who's the other big team in Montevideo, their youth academy, they produced 14 of the 23 who won the last Copa America, like Godín, Suarez, for example.
Yep.
That one of the best youth academies in the world, without a doubt. And I went over, I kept on seeing this boy's name who kept on getting, he'd been hyped up, a 16-year-old who's been hyped up, and he kept on getting, like, he's breaking records in their youth academy. So I went over, watched 5 youth games in a row, and he came on and he scored 6 goals in a game.
Right.
And I was watching it and I was kind of thinking, yeah, but the opposition isn't up to much, you know. He's playing under 16, under 17 football in Uruguay, you know, like.
Could you do it in a wet Wednesday night in Falkirk? That's what you're thinking.
I know the answer. So anyway. So I was talking to some people I know over there in Montevideo, and he's out of contract this June. And I went back over last week because it was the under-20s South American Championship. And I was watching him in some feeds, you know, and some kind of DVDs of him before. He's kind of, you know, there's some players who are maybe like Kaká, who are, it's kind of illogical the way they beat a player. Like, they do simple things, but they do them very well. They have a little bit more pace and a kind of nice touch, and they kind of move into space, and when they're closed down, they'll pass it and then move into the other space. And this boy, you're not sure how he's got past someone, but he just has.
Right.
He'll shift his weight, go the other way, and he doesn't have tremendous pace, but he just goes past players. He's 17 and he's playing in the under-20s. And he didn't start off a game. He was a sub for the first 2 games, and he just pushed his way into the team. And he was what they called the revelation of the South American Championships, like the kind of unknown player who's kind of, he's exceptional. He hits it cleanly with his right, with his left. He's a really exceptional player. Amaral. Now, there's another player in Uruguay who called Pereiro, who's for me, he's the best South American player, who's under 20. And he's 6'2", 6'3", attacking midfielder. he's quick without the ball, but he has really quick feet with it. He's incisive. He's going to be in Europe at the top level in Europe for a decade, I think. He's an exceptional player. But the thing is with Argentina and Uruguay is that every 6 months there's exceptional players. I said to a well-known British club about a 15-year-old boy who he was playing for Newell's Old Boys. He didn't have a professional contract. He was breaking records at Newell's Old Boys. For the title decider last December, they bring off Trezeguet with 20 minutes to go when they need a goal and put him on up front. But he's now at Roma.
Right.
He didn't have a contract. He didn't have a professional contract. And he's now at Roma.
Did that well-known British club even send somebody to look at him?
I have no idea. But there's so many examples. Another example of there's so many examples of players who have Italian passports. There's a boy who was a youth player at Peñarol, who I've mentioned, who is now also at Roma. Who's a youth player? He's now signed for Roma for 1.7 million. There's a 16-year-old boy in Paraguay now called Sergio Diaz, who's playing as a number 10 for the best club in Paraguay, who they're comparing to Sergio Aguero, and they have done for about a year. You have a glance at the Italian league and the top goal scorers, and you get Tevez, Icardi, Dybala, Higuain. You look to Spain and it will be a similar thing. They're just coming out. They're coming out all of the time. There's so much talent here. And the thing is in the top 5 leagues in Europe, 80% of Argentinians have dual passports.
How do they get dual passports?
So many, discounting footballers, so many of my friends in Buenos Aires have dual passports. They have Italian grandparents or great-grandparents, or their parents have retained Italian passports from, from generations. 57% of Uruguayans in the top 5 leagues have dual passports. The boy who was at Peñarol in the youth academy at Peñarol, Kevin Mendes, who doesn't have a very Italian name, obviously, he's got an Italian passport. Now, and at 1.7 million, he was the best player in the under-17s in South America.
Now, we don't seem to be alone in British clubs not picking up the South American youth. I mean, it does seem to be that the English clubs will then pick up the guy once he's played for 3 or 4 seasons and wherever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So why do you think that is?
I think there's obviously a kind of a cultural, there's a head start that Italian and Spanish football have had on English football for, in the teams in the 60s, like Real Madrid and Barcelona would have had South Americans playing for them.
Yeah.
The Atletico Madrid team that played us had Argentinians playing for them. So they'll have had managers, coaches, players continually in their clubs who have contacts back in Buenos Aires or Montevideo or wherever, who are reminding or kind of highlighting to them this kid called Batistuta, or this kid called whatever, and they're picking up. They have, 4 decades of players, like someone like Javier Zanetti, who's now a sporting director into Milan. He'll have people in Buenos Aires watching games in Buenos Aires. Well, Inter Milan will have had that. Porto will have had that. all the Spanish clubs will have it. Pochettino now will now have people in his region in Argentina that produces a huge amount of players, and they'll be going to him, or not exclusively to him, but he'll know who the kids are coming up. Simeone as well. Simeone bought the boy Jimenez, the centre back, who's he's a third choice behind Godin and Miranda. He bought Jimenez for 900,000 from Uruguay. Now, it was in the paper 4 or 5 weeks ago that Manchester City want him for 30 million. It's 18 months he's been at Atletico Madrid. He started for Uruguay with Godin against England in the World Cup. In 900,000. The best kid, Kevin Mendes, who is kind of recognised as being the best kid at Peñarol, he's gone for 1.7. Italian passport. I'm doing something just now, and I went through 10 different clubs who are doing a kind of buy to sell thing. But not just Latin clubs. Also, like Anderlecht and Red Bull Salzburg and Hoffenheim. Going through, when they buy from the South American market, they get more than 4 times the profitability as when they buy from the European market.
What was it obvious with lots of clubs represented at the Under 20 Championships?
Yeah. The game Uruguay versus Brazil, they were apparently, according to two newspapers, there were over 140 representatives. Now, Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester City definitely had people there.
Well, so if Man City had someone there, do we need to send someone?
Who knows?
So, but obviously that's the cream, and for what you're saying is the cream is excellent, and the tier below that cream, not to put words to your mouth, would probably be good enough for us.
Yeah, but we shouldn't be going for that. We can get the best. There's always a window. The good thing about South America is there's always a window. Now, we don't have a window to buy the best German players, the best Spanish players, the best English players, or the best Italian players. There is no window of opportunity to get those players. We do have a window of opportunity to get the very best Romanian, Bulgarian, or whatever players. However short that window might be, it still exists. You can still get Stilian Petrov. You can still get the next Deutschkov or Berbatov when they're coming up. We can get the very best. So, there's a work permit thing, which is why Uruguay and Argentina should be, that should be the place that we target, because there are so many people with EU passports there already.
Right.
So I do accept that it would be tricky to go to, Colombia, say, and there's a lot of talent there. And in that respect, maybe Porto have an advantage over us and Benfica have an advantage because, it's a more lax system.
Right.
But if we're not going for two countries in the world that have hugely more profitable players than us, who have been producing the best players in the world for 100 years and who are EU citizens, then for me it's illogical. And it isn't, people made an argument that you kind of joked before about could he do it on a Wednesday night at Falkirk. And people were saying that about South American players up until 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's easy to make that claim when there's no actual South American players playing in your league. And then they actually started playing in the English league.
Yep.
And Tevez, Aguero, Zabaleta, they became the best players in the league.
Strangely enough,
best player in the league.
They don't get dropped when their team goes to play Stoke on a Wednesday night and it's raining.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Aguero, but we're going to put Milner up front instead of
you. It's raining and we're in Stoke and it's a nighttime game. You get no chance, mate.
there's not much more, you know. It's up to clubs, and to be fair, Celtic aren't alone in not scouting South America. Like, they're increasing because, like, I've met people who are over there scouting. I've met, you know, other English people, representatives of other English clubs, like Tottenham, for instance, who are watching youth games and other clubs at professional games. But, you know, it's not widespread. So it's not kind of, you know, like...
It's still probably that British mentality of, but can they hack it in our country? There's still a bit of that, can they do it in a wet Wednesday night mentality?
Yeah. And now you're starting to get South American managers in the English league. You get Pochettino, Pellegrini, Poyet.
Yeah.
And so you're getting a kind of... They're playing their own players and they're disproving it bit by bit.
So we're not the only ones, but there's no reason why we couldn't start tomorrow.
I would go along with that. And one other point would be that even if you were to have the opinion that they won't be able to hack it, and, you know, in a Scottish culture, or in fact, there's two points.
Do they eat chips? If you,
no. Yeah. We'll need to work around that. There's 2 points. Is that where we make a difference isn't in Scotland. It's in European football. It's playing against other good European teams. So the point about, Scottish football doesn't really stand true when we're actually competing against Benfica and whoever to get into that second place in a Champions League group. Those are our competitors. Our competitors are the people in the Champions League qualifiers and then the second and fourth seed in the Champions League group. The other point would be that even if the English clubs are reticent to buy directly from South America, they might see a sensational player, but they'll be reticent. Celtic, more than any other club in world football, is ideally positioned as being that bridge to the Premier League. We bring over a Uruguayan, Argentinian, and they settle. 2 years, they learn English. They can go to a they can play in the Champions League for 1 or 2 years, and they can go into the English League having proven that they're settled into British culture, fluent in English, having played in the Champions League. No other club can do that. No other club in the world can do that. And with this TV deal, all of the South Americans will, apart from Barcelona and Real Madrid, they'll all be looking, the agents will all be looking to get their boys into the Premier League.
So actually what you're saying is there's never been a better time for Scottish teams to look at South America to give them that window.
Yeah. And you're seeing that even when we're not talking about the elite, but someone like Leonardo Ochoa, who Brighton got him, albeit from a Spanish second division club, they bought him for £2 million and they sold him for £7 million. This is a guy who's an Argentinian second division player. He's a sub for San Lorenzo, who then goes into second division. He then goes to the Spanish second division, to the English second tier, and he's a £7 million player. Dybala, who's at Palermo, who's apparently off to Arsenal or City or whoever for £40 million, £30 million, he was in the second division in Argentina. Anyway.
Okay, so conscious of the time, and I'd like to get this out so people can listen to the joy of Celtic in the morning on their way to work. We've got a game against Hamilton on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Do you make many changes to that team after the effort they put in or not? And what's your thoughts on the score?
I would like to see Henderson play. I think there do need to be some players rested because we've got Inter and after what, Aberdeen.
Yep.
I think this would be an ideal time to rest some players. I think Henderson for next season, I would like him to be given at least 20, have 20 appearances to keep him developing. He looks as though he could be a really genuinely good player.
Yeah.
The decisions he makes, his layoffs, the kind of weight of his passes, a really nice player. I hope we carry on, you know, giving him playing time.
He certainly moved ahead of McGregor.
I kind of feel sorry for McGregor in a way that he kind of, we've been criticised. And there are better players. There are better players than McGregor. But to be fair to him, he did score away at Maribor. He did score away at Legia. They're big games.
Yep.
Where, to be fair to him, young Scottish boy who we brought through, you know, it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Ronnie Dyla. He was given a chance, he grabbed the chance, and Ronnie Dyla gave him as long as he could to prove for the player to prove it.
Yep, I agree. And, I'm trying to think of any other changes. There must be a reason why they never rest Ezequiel. There must be a logical reason, because something like, he doesn't even go on holiday when, like, when we give him, like, 2 weeks off, he'll... He seems to be insistent on playing. But ideally, I'd like to have him fresh, you know, ready for Inter Milan again. But get his, you know.
Maybe he just wants to keep playing. His backside seems to have halved in size this season, so.
score, what, 2-0, 3-0.
It's all about Inter Milan. Beat Hamilton by whatever score, play Inter Milan. I'm on that happy note. I will say, Mark Cooper, thanks very much for being the podcast, and we'll speak again soon.
Cool. Thanks very much, Hank.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
I hope you enjoyed that chat between myself and Mark. As you can tell, I need to end the podcast soon because my voice is nearly finished. Brilliant game, absolutely brilliant. Not enjoyed a Celtic game like that in many a day. Absolutely fantastic. Couple of tongue-in-cheek comments on there. The people, if you didn't like Ronnie Dyla, you know I'm only joking. Because eating humble pie is a difficult thing for people to do. I get that completely. But we're all behind the man now, and isn't it fantastic? Can't wait for the next Celtic game. If you're one of the 20,000 who's been not really bothering to turn up, this is what we are starting to deliver every week under Ronnie Dyla. It's absolutely brilliant, absolutely fantastic. Can't wait. I know I keep saying that, but genuinely, I can't wait for the next Celtic game. Hopefully we beat Hamilton, and hey, you never know. That's enough from me. That was Mark Cooper. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night. Good night.
Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.